So I'm just going to ask everyone to kind of settle in here. I'm not going to mute everyone just yet. If we wind up with a lot of background noise, then I will mute everyone. You can mute yourself by pushing *6, and then *6 again unmutes you. So if you know that you've got a lot of background noise, you can elect to do that. Otherwise, we'll just go ahead. Okay. So I'd like everyone to take a couple of breaths. Allow yourself to just kind of settle in here. Settle in from wherever you've been running around doing and just let yourself be here. So I want to thank you for coming today to this talk about awakening and healing as our destiny. And I know there are a lot of other things you could be doing this morning, so I'm happy you're here. From the point of view of non-duality, the world is a single thing, a unity that is so whole that it includes difference and dissonance, differences that range from differences between you and me, that there are separate beings, also differences of opinion, paradox, conflict, ambiguity. This singleness or unity of reality exists prior to our breaking things into pieces or parts, prior to our naming of these pieces and parts into atoms and cells or molecules or bacteria, or on a personal level, prior to our breaking life into pieces, into things we like or dislike, good or bad, judgments, rejections, and so on. In our naming and separating of reality into pieces and parts, the depth of reality's wholeness is often unfathomable to us in so many ways. What is also amazing is that reality is so whole that everything is set up so that whatever we can be in relationship with, remain present with, returns us to this inherent wholeness. We've all experienced this in moments. We just may not have called it that. I'm going to say more about that a little bit later. But just for now, take in the possibility that reality is so whole that everything we can be in relationship with, remain present with, returns us to this inherent wholeness. It's a very big topic, and we could spend years exploring it. And, of course, for those of you who are who've been through a Society of Souls through the training, know we, in fact, do spend years, a lifetime, exploring this topic. Awakening or development of consciousness happens in two main ways. The first we could call quantities or linear stages of growth and development. The second we could call qualities, which is congruent with what I spoke of a few minutes ago, where there's a fundamental shift in consciousness to the ground of wholeness or the ground of unity. From a linear perspective, our consciousness changes from babyhood to toddler to adolescence to young adulthood to middle age to senior citizens and so on. As a baby, our consciousness is merged with our caretaker, and our whole world is him or her or both of them. As a toddler, we begin experiencing some degree of separation, and our consciousness is different because we're focused on little things that we want, things that we can grab, whether there is food that we want or toys that we're grabbing or that we're trying to reach up to the next higher shelf, our consciousness, our world has become a little different. It has shifted from when it was when we were a baby, primarily in the crib. And on it goes. The things we're concerned about as a baby, like wet diapers and breast or the milk, changes to other concerns, such as later with adult, we have the concerns of our jobs and relationships and families. But, of course, these early needs don't go away. They just become included in a greater whole. That's part of the linear development. We still have to go to the bathroom. We still have to eat. But now our consciousness includes many other things, whereas our consciousness as a baby was primarily focused on the caretaker world and what was happening within that space. But each stage then also has a completely different quality. We change in some fundamental manner. It's not just that we're the same person we were as a baby, but only bigger as an adult. Our consciousness has actually changed. Our worldview is different. Each stage has a different consciousness. We have more engagement with the larger world outside of ourselves from that perspective. We also hope that as we grow wiser and have more understanding and compassion as we age and gain more experience and have benefit of more engagement with others in the world. Interactions with others who are different from us, go through challenges and losses, births and deaths and so on. But, of course, that's not necessarily true. This is where, again, it's the difference between whether we're talking about a stage of growth or we're talking or quantity versus quality. Because from the standpoint, there's also what's also true is that we can become more contracted, more fixed in our ways, more stubborn, and actually less wise, actually. We can become more afraid as we age and meet the uncertainties and challenges of life. So change happens ongoing. You know, there's this ongoing development and opportunity. Life goes on, whether we change in consciousness or not. We age. However, the consciousness of a man or a woman who can include more of life's changes and challenges and remain whole and actually increase in compassion for themselves and others has a very different quality.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Yes, I missed you.
Still here.
Okay.
I'm confused. We lost Brenda.
Oh, you went away for a minute, Brenda. That's what happened.
Yep.
Okay. Well, so what did you not hear? When did I go away?
You were talking about growing and changing and different consciousness, different than quantity.
Okay. So, as I said, we hope that as we grow that as we grow older, we also grow wiser and have more understanding and compassion. Did you hear that part? Okay. But as I said, we can also become more contracted. The consciousness of a man or a woman who can include more of life's changes and challenges, this is important, and remain whole and increase in compassion for themselves and others has a very different quality than merely aging alone. There are many people walking around, including ourselves at moments, who are essentially babies in grown-up clothing, who throw temper tantrums when we don't get our way, or who are stuck in adolescence and are determined to fight everyone who has a different opinion from theirs. We've also had moments, again, in which our consciousness remained whole. Things that used to drive us crazy, like we would walk into our parents' home, and immediately the same old argument or questioning would begin. But this time, instead of getting caught up in it, And instead of being upset about it for days, you are able to see, oh, this is what they do. This is their thing. It's not mine. You were able to have a certain degree of attachment from it. You weren't judging them. It wasn't a place of judging them. You just got that this is their limitation, their worry, not mine. The quality of your consciousness in that moment was the ability to remain whole in the face of something that used to shatter you, that used to drive you completely batty for days. And there's increased compassion in that moment for yourself and for them. You get it. You get something that's true about what happens when we break things apart. I'll just pause a moment. Are there any questions about what I've said so far? Or comments?
No, I like your your example, which really made me understood what you meant by whole.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was a little bit lost before that, but you know, your example just brought an understanding of what you were saying.
Good. So, awakening or changing the quality of our consciousness is not a fixed thing. We call this awakening, and it can feel very mystical and abstract, which is what you were referring to in the beginning. But when we look at it, we've all had these moments in which that was true, in which the same arguments don't catch us in the same way, in which we're able to see something differently and we're able to remain whole through it. We're able to go and have a discussion with a boss that used to have us shaking in our boots for days, and we were able to do it and just stand our ground and be able to be true to ourselves without killing off the other person, without attacking them, but could stay true to ourselves. We've had these moments in which this was the quality of our consciousness had changed. We were able to remain whole in the face of something that used to break us apart. You know, it's been a very intense time in the world lately. All of us know this. It seems that we cannot listen to the news as there isn't one more horrific thing happening, from the terrorist acts in Paris and West Bank and Tel Aviv, the Syrian refugee crisis, and so on. On a daily basis, life is filled with conflict and war, disease, poverty, addiction, global warming, pollution and death, as well as birth and joy and beauty and connections and relationships. It's often hard to find a footing in the middle of such great preciousness of life, such great beauty, along with such uncertainty and terror and chaos. Words like awakening and healing, or other words like forbearance, patience, faith, and trust, are attempts to point us in the direction of something that we innately feel could be more healing, could help us deal more with the uncertainties of our lives in the world, could help us, in fact, remain more whole in the face of all of this constant change. What's also true is that these words can also block our way, because they can sound very mystical and perhaps more than we can do, and they can feel like it's too big for us. Or we can start to think there's only one way, one right way, and all others are wrong, that we're not good enough, wise enough, or we cannot reach our ideals of faith or trust. We can also start thinking that being awake or having a quality of consciousness that is whole is some kind of solid state, and we have to try to freeze it and fix that state. And that to be awake means we awake entirely out of all of our problems or struggles, so that we don't feel the pain or confusion or imperfection or uncertainties in being human. So as much as these words can be helpful to us, we also have to know that we have the tendency as human beings to lock things in, to try to lock ourselves in to a preferred state, whether the preferred state is I'm awake and I can remain whole in the face of this, or the preferred state is I'm happy I don't want sadness, or I don't want confusion. But we all have a tendency to try to lock ourselves in, again, into pieces. It's a piece of life, such as happiness, a piece of life, and we have a tendency to try to make it the whole thing. And we struggle and are against life. We resist life when that isn't true. And, of course, it isn't true. Life is continually changing. Our inner life, in terms of our feelings about things, is continually changing. If we tracked our moods throughout the day, we'd see how many different kinds of moods appear. You know, we're happy about something. We're frustrated that the computer won't do what we wanted to do. Oh, that phone keeps ringing. We're happy. Oh, I'm hearing from Sue I haven't talked to in years. That's that guy who drives me nuts. Oh, I've been put on hold. If we track our moods throughout the day, we'd see how much we change throughout the day, and how often we start breaking things apart. We're judging ourselves. We're judging what's going on. We're rejecting and cutting things off. Or then if we're into the idea of being awake or being compassionate with life, we can try to go into a false place of serenity in which we're not going to let anything touch us. Life can go on around us, and we're not going to be affected by it. So we have these very subtle ways that we break the world down. We break it down into pieces. It's hard for us to really trust the intelligence that's built into life, the divine wholeness, the wholeness or the intelligence that's built into life, into all of these states, and that even though they appear as just completely different things, they actually are one thing. They're actually a unity. It's hard for us to do that. So, before I go on, anyone else have a comment or a thought? Question?
Brenda, I have a question. A question comment. Sometimes the realization that that it's all part of the whole doesn't keep time with what's going on. I mean, I'll use an example. For example, in the morning, I wake up, everything is going fine, and then all of a sudden I'm overcome with sadness. I recognize it's holiday season. I recognize the whole shtick about, you know, childhood. And I stay in that, but it's only later that something happens, and I go back and say, oh, okay. So for that moment, a few minutes ago, I had lapsed into seeing me versus the world rather than me part of the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have to know that's going to happen. You know, it because again, being awake is not a constant, consistent state. What is consistent, since I know you, Florence, is that your desire to be whole is always present, right along with the wholeness of reality. So when something appears like that, sometimes in the moment you can wake up to that, and sometimes you wake up to it an hour later or 2 days later, but you'll wake up to it because you do know that wholeness is there. You just forget about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you can be compassionate to yourself for the forgetting, then it does its job.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brenda, it's Daniel.
Uh-huh.
I find this reminder about what awakening is, a relief and reassuring because of the idealized view that I've internalized or that's societally held about what awakening looks like and what it is to be healed, and the way that we can punish ourselves with feeling like we have to achieve a special state to get there, which is someplace other than where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very different notion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, again, we have to look at the development. I'm going to do two different things. I'm just going to let that stand. I'm going to weave it back into what I'm doing later. So,
okay.
Great.
Hi, Brenda. This is Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
Just to piggyback on what Daniel said, I was really feeling the trustworthiness of the awakening process, and much less efforting because it appears to me, or seems to me, that once awake or awakening, it takes concerted effort to go back to sleep, if indeed that is at all possible.
Yes.
So even those in those deepest, darkest moments of where I might feel like I'm totally asleep, there's this deeper movement going on. So I'm just loving the sense in my body of, oh, this is a current and a movement that doesn't require my conscious participation or personal participation or effort.
Right.
In fact, conversely, I could be much more peaceful within myself if I was able to stay in this more effortless part. And of course I won't, because I'll be drawn forward and triggered and all sorts of interesting things. But it never, the awakening process, it seems now then, can never be stopped once it's begun.
Mm-hmm.
Which I love.
Well, Sarah, it's so important what you're saying. Again, I'm taking it back to what I said at the beginning, which is that reality is set up in such a way that it keeps bringing us, as you said, to this. Yes, we can keep rejecting that, and yes, we can keep pushing it away. But as you said, once we allow ourselves to really enter into that stream and follow the longing that is in every created thing to be whole, and we allow that to become activated in our lives and our hearts and our minds and our bodies, which means we're participating with the wholeness that reality really is. Once we allow ourselves to really engage in that way, then the signals and the movements keep bringing us there. So getting lost, you know, it comes right along with getting found. We can get, you know, confused, and wisdom enters in. We find that there is, there's so much, I often talk to my clients, talking about reality conspiring to help us to heal. because it shows up in that way. When we are actively participating with the way the world is made, which has this unity, this singularity, this wholeness in it, and we're participating with that, we find that everything in life really does keep bringing us again and again and again, and that it isn't, again, it is what Daniel said, it's not fixed and it's not an idealized state, it's not perfect, it's not, we're just going to get it right and we can settle down. It's continually in the fabric of everything.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. So from a non-dual point of view, to be actively engaged, as we've been talking about, in this process of awakening, we have to take into account the relationship of two things. The ambiguity of the world itself, the way the world is made, the uncertainty that's built into reality, and the filters each individual person has in their consciousness based on their history, the things that hurt us or made us happy and how they shaped us, our ideas and concepts, our personal filters, the stories we tell ourselves about what is happening, including our ability to be with things, things we think we can't bear, the things we feel are that we're not enough, we're fundamentally flawed, all those things. So we have to work with both how the world is made and how we're made, because we're part of the world, so we're part of that flow of wholeness, while simultaneously the fact that we have these individual filters. So let's start first with the ambiguity of the world. Our world flows. Try this on for size. Our world actually flows and reveals its wholeness because order and chaos are intertwined. Now, from an artistic standpoint, we might recognize that. Artists recognize these places of where chaos and not knowing and emptiness and confusion are all necessary in order for something to come out, for a completed piece to come out. So order and chaos are intertwined. We get that from an artistic standpoint. But it's often much harder for us as human beings to recognize and really take that in as a truth of the world. We actually resist that a great deal. Because we often have these ideas of wholeness. This is, again, where I'm going to bring in the filter, the personal filter. We often have these ideas of wholeness that mean that the world should only be orderly, as an example. Things should follow a certain order. They should be completely clear. They should fit together in a particular kind of way. And chaos, we may not be such a friend with. Another pair of opposites that reveal the ambiguity of the world and the wholeness of the world, life and death. Life and death are always together, and it is only our unwillingness to see this that keeps us believing that those are completely two different things, separate from each other. Our understanding of death has been blinded by our fear. With death, we've tended to look at it only from a physical standpoint, as an example, where we see that there was one who lived, and now he or she ceases to exist in a physical form. Or we've looked at it only from an emotional or psychological standpoint. Again, these are these filters, where the emotional impact of death is often so devastating. Our grief and our sadness and our loss and other profound emotions overwhelm us. from the stage point of view, you know, the, as I was talking about, the developmental linear stage point of view, grief and sadness is different than when, of course, it first happens, when a loved one first dies, than years later. At the same time, we can bring those feelings back, someone that we particularly love and we're close to. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's part of our honoring them, because life and death, again, go together. Part of our life is feeling the preciousness of one who is in our life and one who is no longer in our life. But it does change developmentally. It changes and moves. But when we don't allow it to change and move in that way, then we've pulled it out of the rhythm of life. We've kept it frozen. Excuse me, I'm pausing a moment. I'm just going to name this because it's part of the picture for me. One of our beloved cats died this morning about 2 a.m. She actually showed up on our doorstep the day my husband and I were married.
Wow.
So grief is very much with me right now. So we need to be able to have our grief, our confusion, and our sorrow as an example. They're completely valid, and they're completely important. We also want to have the courage and willingness to be able to come and explore, to inquire into the nature of reality, to find a place for death in our life. The great paradox is that, again, this, when we break things apart, when we can only resist death, hate it, as an example, we also are resisting life.
So Brenda,
yes.
Can you say a little bit more about making a place for death?
So I'll talk about it from both the quality standpoint, the quantity standpoint that I talked about, the stages being the quantity. So from a stage standpoint, to make a place for it is to recognize the stage you're in. If it's just happened, as I said this morning, if it's just happened, if it's just there, then you need to honor the stage that you're in. You need to honor it by being able to cry. You need to be honored by being able to talk about the one who has passed. You need to be able to not just say, oh, okay, I should be over it yesterday, which is a false view of stages. Because stages, it's not necessarily the same for you as it is for someone else. The idea that someone should be over a death a year later, who says you should be over a death a year later? But you have to honor that there are stages. There are stages in your system. And you have to ask yourself, what's true for me now? That's part of making a place. What's true? How can I be with this death in a way that honors the life of this precious one and honors my life and honors what's actually here for me? And what do I need to do, whether that's talking,
Hello?
Crying, praying, writing, whatever it turns out to be. And you have to honor whatever that is. So that's making a place.
Where are you?
Excuse
Makes
me?
Sense. Makes sense.
Thank you.
From the standpoint of quality, I'll give another view of it. From the standpoint of quality, I know that consciousness, in fact, is, as I said, there's a wholeness, inherent wholeness that's built in. And part of that inherent wholeness is that all forms have a beginning and an end. All forms. There's no form, whether it is a form in terms of I'm happy in the moment and then I move to sadness, that's a form and it changes, or it's a physical form. But no form begins that doesn't also have an end. And from the standpoint of quality, if I really know that, I really take it into myself, then the preciousness of all of life, including my life, because I'll reflect on my own filters. One of my own particular filters is that I can often feel the preciousness of everyone else's life. I don't always feel the preciousness, the fragility, the vulnerability of my own life. And it reminds me of that. It reminds me of the truth that my life is precious. My life is valuable. And it helps me in terms of the quality of consciousness, in terms of where I put my time and energy, where I don't put my time and energy. If my life is precious, then I don't want to waste it in terms of doing things that that don't feel healing and whole and alive to me. So it's got a lot of implications in it. Does that make sense, Nancy?
Yeah, it's really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I missed the beginning with the confusion on the numbers.
It's okay. It's my fault with the thing. So, thank you. How's everyone taking this in?
Brenda?
Yes?
This is Fortunate. I'm having trouble with that because my cousin, who's 43 years old, is in the last stage of cancer and will not survive the week. And I'm having a lot of trouble with that whole concept.
I understand that. I'm going to ask whoever, there's someone who's moving around, if you could mute yourself, *6, that would be helpful. Again, I think you have to look at the stage that you're at, sweetie. The stage that you're at right now is your loved one is dying, is actively in the process of dying. She hasn't died yet. She's in the process of dying. Mm-hmm. And in the process of dying, there's often an enormous amount of resistance that comes up. We don't want our loved one to go.
Mm-hmm.
We are angry that our loved one is going. We are angry that, you know, a 42-year-old is dying. We have these, again, these filters. This part of us that says that's wrong. It's wrong that someone 42 years old should die. We have these ideas around death that have to do with, you know, we should be 100 and we should all die in our sleep. You know, we have these mm-hmm. ideas, whether that's your idea or not. We have different ideas in our world. And it's very hard for us, particularly if she's dying and she's also leaving young ones behind, which I don't know if she is or isn't, but that often brings up even more pain and anguish around it. But the mm-hmm. stage that you're at right now is the stage in which there's an enormous amount of resistance and pain and just not wanting it to happen and not feeling you can bear this.
Mm-hmm.
That's honest. To be mm-hmm. with the wholeness of life, to actually be, again, this is the awakening is not an ideal state. To be awake means you're awake to what's actually there. And what's actually there is, this is what you feel. So you want to give room to that. You want to be able to, you know, if you can't talk to it to her or she can't talk to you, and, you know, within that, then you talk to someone else. And you let those feelings come up. You let that be true for you. You don't have to be beyond that. You don't have to be wiser than that. You have to be exactly where you are. This is, again, part of the paradox. If you can be in this place of resistance, this place of anguish, this place of, I don't want to be here, I don't want this to be happening, that actually already is remaining whole, being present with what's going on, because then it's allowed, it can then move to another stage. Usually what happens is we try to resist the stage we're at, and we try to make it either, you know, we try to be wiser, you know, than we are, move three steps ahead, or something like that. And what we really need to do is stay with the stage that we're at. And when we do that, then naturally life will take you to another stage, whatever the next stage is. But, yeah, sweetie, it's just hard. It's, you know, the great beauty is, if you didn't love so much, it wouldn't hurt. And yet, it's hard.
Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone else have anything they'd like to share?
Brenda, this is Hannah.
Hi, Hannah.
I'm aware. Yeah, thank you. I'm sitting with what you said a little while ago about asking myself what's true for me now and making a place for that, and then what do I need to do. And I'm just so aware that when I do that, it feels trustworthy, and it places me in what you began with. It places me in the ambiguity of the world. And just how much I love to have the answers before they're ready to come.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's, we don't realize the way, the effect the filters we have on our relationship to the ambiguity of the world. And that when we start filtering where we are, judging where we are, and trying to get ourselves to be in some other kind of idealized state, then the, again, the inherent wholeness, the intelligence that's built into where you are doesn't get a chance to reveal itself. And there's intelligence. There really is. It's trustworthy, and there's intelligence in whatever state you're in, whatever stage you're in, the stage of knowing only a little piece and much, much more unknown, or the stage you're in which, you know, I have clarity in these ways and I have complete confusion in these ways, whatever it is. And it really is trustworthy. And we can only find out if we're willing to let it be there.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it's what I'm writing right now.
Yeah.
Is trusting what's present and that what will come next. As I've been making some work decisions, that what will come next will be right and trustworthy, even though I can't see it.
Okay. So, thank you, sweetie. So I'd like to take us through just a simple exercise to help bring that forward. I'm going to temporarily mute everyone just because there's been a little background noise, and I want to make sure that everyone hears it, and then I'll unmute everyone. Okay, you can still unmute yourself, but I'm going to do it, and then I'll unmute you again. So take a few moments to observe how your body feels right now. Focus on your physical sensations, your breath, any tightness or contractions in your body, where your body feels relaxed. Whatever your body feels, just notice that. Just notice your breath. Now think of a situation that's difficult in your life right now, or something that brings up anxiety in you right now. Could be something you've been wrestling with for days. Could be whatever it is, just allow some difficulty and take some time to imagine it vividly. The details of the situation. Where you're feeling anxious or resistant or upset. Let your feelings become very alive in you. Now notice what has changed in your body since you began remembering this situation or feeling the difficulty. Has your breath changed? Your pulse? Are you tight or tense? Contracted in any particular place in your body? Pick one of these changes and put your focus on it right now and allow it to be vivid. If the contraction's in your stomach or you feel it around your heart or your... breath, just pick this place. Now drop all of the details of the situation. Let go of all your feelings, just temporarily letting go of your feelings, letting go of the details, and just be with the sensation in your body, the place in your body that felt contracted or the way your breath changed. Just focus on the sensation that's going on in your body. If you have trouble dropping the story, dropping the situation, just tell yourself it's okay. You can pick it back up again in a different way in a moment. Right now, just focus on the sensation, the contraction, change in your breath, whatever it is. Notice what happens when you do. How does it change? Okay, now just I'd like to ask, could a couple of people share with me what that was like for you?
Oh, this is Evie. I actually did feel a softening. My great surprise.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you well.
Okay, so when the details went away, the actual sensation softened. It didn't go away completely, but I could feel it softening quite considerably.
Right. Right. Okay. I will talk about that in just a minute. Thank you. Anyone else?
This is Nancy. When I dropped the details, immediately I could breathe. Like my breathing just opened right up.
Uh-huh.
Before you had even said, pay attention to your body now without that.
That's great.
So different.
That's great. Anyone else? Did anyone not have the experience of it softening or changing in any way?
When you first said to drop the details, my mind went somewhere else. It surprised me. But it just went into some other little story, not related to the difficulty at all.
It went to some other difficulty or something, uh-huh.
Yes, yes. But uh-huh. Then I, you know, was able to come back. And
uh-huh.
And when I did that, I was able to focus on the tension I was feeling. And then when I was able to stay with that, it softened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is a practice, and it is it's a simple practice, but it also has big implications, meaning that what happens when we are struggling with something. And again, sometimes we need to do that, so we need to honor the stage we're at with it. And if the stage we're at is that we need to really be deep in our sorrow or be deep in our pain, then we need to honor that. I'm going to mute everyone again just temporarily because there's a little noise again, but I'll unmute you. So we have to honor the stage we're in, and sometimes we need to be very deep in our grief, and that's the only thing we need to be dealing with, or we need to be very deep in whatever place we're in, and we need to honor that. What's also true is this is a practice, is that when I find that I have been going over and over and over again in my head something that I'm trying to work out, I'm trying to solve a problem, in my life. I'm trying to solve a challenge. And I think the way I'm going to get to the answer is by continuing to perseverate over it for days and days and days and hours. Actually, that is more of me breaking things out into pieces, cutting life up, and me trying to figure things out and reason things out. And it actually doesn't allow me to be awake to the wholeness or the intelligence that is built in really to the situation. And it doesn't allow me to be with the wholeness of my whole life and how things are unfolding and the rightness of this actually having a place in my life. So if I do this practice, I'm letting the story, the difficulty live, including all of my feelings about it, my reactions and things to it. I let it get vivid. It's a nice vivid ball. And I feel things happening in my body. I'm contracting in a certain way. My breath changes, whatever it is that goes on. But I let it live. And then I notice, you notice the sensation that's going on in the body. And for that moment, I drop the story entirely. And I just let myself stay with the sensation. And then it begins to change. It begins to soften. If it doesn't, because I find myself jumping to another place, which is a habit of, worrying. We all have, that's one of the filters we can have. Then I'll bring myself back. I'll do it again. Go to the sensation. And what happens is that I find that it begins to move in my body in a different way and in my mind a different way. It's not that I get an immediate answer usually or some immediate solution or it's that it isn't being held in the same contracted way as something separate from the rest of life. It's returned to the whole of life. And so therefore, it can have a different rhythm, a different place in my system and a different place in my world, which means that sometimes if it's a particularly big difficulty, I may have to do this several times over a few days. But I find that things begin to open up in a different way, organically. I either have an insight to go talk to another person, or I have an insight to go look someplace, or I have something begins to reveal itself to me. Maybe what begins to happen is I just feel more able to be with this change in my life, and I have a different relationship with it. So maybe I have just a sense of like, oh, I can do this. I can handle this. I can be here. Different things will happen, but it allows us to have our feelings and our stories, but not have them have us, so to speak. They don't carry us completely. They don't take us down a particular track. They've now returned to more of a relationship with the rest of my life, rest of our lives. So again, it's a good practice just to work with it, particularly when I find myself trying to work through something in my life and I find that I'm focused on it in a particular way, a bit too contracted around it, a bit too focused or hard around it. I find that it really helps to work with this as a practice. So I'll unmute everyone. So did that make sense, what I said, in terms of how you can use this practice?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
And you also understand, I said, that sometimes this practice may not be an appropriate practice if you're really deep in your grief or your sorrow or something that you really need to stay with those feelings in that way, and you need to let whatever's there be there. So then you're just going to honor the intelligence that's in that and stay with that. But all of us have these things where we are perseverating over something, and it's not serving us. It's not helping us to move with it or move through it. And this, I find, does. Daniel, was that clear, you think, to everyone, or is there any comment you'd add to that? Daniel, you still here?
Sorry, I had muted myself. I didn't. It was clear to me, you know, one of the things this helps me with is the paradox that being with what's here, like letting down our defenses and being more openly, honestly here with what is, which can feel like it enters us into a stagnant state, and we can resist it because, no, I don't want to be here with whatever this difficulty is.
Mm-hmm.
It helps me with the paradox that relaxing into that recouples the natural movement in life so that I grow and move on from here. Maybe that's part of what was in your title for today about healing and our destiny, that when we can relax into being who we are, things naturally change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So again, I'm going to ask, if you're moving around and you're doing things, please push *6 and mute yourself. Thank you. You know, it's what, you know, life has hurt us. You know, it's unpredictable and sometimes quite painful. And bad things certainly do happen. So it's hard for us to see that and actually be willing to, it feels very counterintuitive, to be willing to enter into whatever is going on in our lives and allow it to exist in the state that it's in, and be willing to, in that, allow the divine intelligence or the intelligence that's in it to appear, to reveal itself. It's very counterintuitive. We have a lot of these filters again. The filters include we defend against that, depending on our own childhood histories, and we all have to do a lot of work to untangle from some of these misconceptions that have appeared, or things that once worked for us. You know, that's the thing about defenses. Defenses work for us in a place in our lives where we really, really needed them to save ourselves from something that was horrific, something that was too big even just for our developing mind and body to bear. But then what happens is the defense gets locked into place, and it stays in place 50 years later, 20 years later, 30 years later, and we use it automatically. We don't question it. So automatically the shield comes up. Automatically the sword comes out. Automatically the argument comes out of our mouth. And that happens. Automatically we start judging ourselves. Automatically we start criticizing, beating ourselves up for a particular thought or feeling we have, telling ourselves we should do it differently. These are all automatic defenses. And part of just this activity, this particular practice even, is a practice where we learn to let it live, but at the same time, we begin to become a little bit less attached to it, because by letting it go temporarily in that space and just being with sensation, for that moment we've let down our guard. For that moment we've chosen to be with ourselves in a different way, to see just what will happen, to see what's possible if we do it. So we could take it on as an experiment of what would happen if in this moment I did something different with it. You could pick the defense back up 5 minutes later. You can pick up where, you know, exactly where you were within it. But for that moment, you're allowing some other possibility to enter in, which means you're allowing yourself to be with the inherent wholeness, the inherent unity of your life in a different way. And it is, again, counterintuitive. But the thing about practice is that we practice it. We try it. We try it out, and we see if it works for us. And then, as I said, it takes time for that to integrate into us. But when we're after changing the quality of our consciousness, we have to do something different than just going through a stage. We have to be willing to find the compassion that is built into the world when we can be with the world. Turns out, you know, we're made of this compassion, but we don't experience it when we are in the place of defense only, when we're in the place of beating ourselves up only. We don't get to experience the beneficence, the compassion. We just don't. So it is it's a choice, actually. It's a conscious quality choice to say, I want to find a new way, a way that is more whole, that feels more free, that feels kinder to myself and others. And it can often be a challenging choice for ourselves personally and in the world, because we fear that if we're kind, we're just going to get run over, as an example. But it's a different kind of kindness. It's a kindness that includes, we talk about it, as you know, in the school, as love with bones. It's a different kind of kindness. It doesn't mean we don't say something is wrong. It doesn't mean we don't say, no, that's not allowed. All of that, it plays out. But it means it's a choice. It's a decided choice of compassion for ourselves and the world to say certain things need to change. And that needs to happen. But to do so in a way that isn't just rejecting, cutting off, judging is a very different thing. A no that is considered and compassionate is very different than a no that doesn't have that in it. So, as I said, this is a huge, huge topic. We could, you know, it's a huge, huge territory. So we're just dipping into something that's so big in implications for our lives.
Brenda,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Is it okay to make a comment?
Absolutely.
Okay. It strikes me with all of what you're saying with this practice that you're suggesting, and you may have spoken again about this earlier before I got on the call, but that it presumes a basic level of trust, I think, in the unity, in the wholeness, in the overarching intelligence of the universe.
Go ahead.
That, you know, for myself is often there, not always, and certainly the people with whom I work is often questionable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it speaks to that presumption, though, that we start from that place of trust.
Well, it's an interesting thing for me, Nancy. I mean, I think that, again, we have to look at the filters we've all had in terms of our lives and what has happened to us. For some of us, that basic trust is something that, you know, we've had. We feel it's there. We don't know how to live into it. We don't know how to be with it fully, but somehow we feel that that's true. For others, we may not feel that that's true. You know, we've had a whole series of things that happened to us in our histories, and we think that that's kind of crazy to think. So the thing for me is that both of those are okay. It isn't that you have to have a trust. I think it's more that you have to be willing to try something out. What happens when we reach usually a certain place of pain in our life, a certain place where our life really doesn't work, you know, to use the AA term, my life's become unmanageable, or, you know, whether, it, you know, something in our lives, we're just having too much pain going on in our lives. We have to reach a certain place where we say, okay, what I'm doing doesn't work. It doesn't make me happy. It doesn't make me feel alive or free or whole or real or authentic. It doesn't. None of that's true. So I would say to people then, what if? I would try it out. What if there was inherent wholeness in reality? What if there was unity? What if reality is so whole that it's inviting me continually to wake up and be in relationship? What if that was true? How would my life would change? What would happen if that was true? Because I've been living my life from the assumption that it wasn't true. I've been living my life from an assumption that the world's just fractured, or whatever people have been living their lives from. And what if that was true? So I don't think that people have to take it on board as in 100% take it on board, you know, drink the Kool-Aid. I don't think that's necessary at all. I think that people need to have their skepticism. They need to have their questioning. They need to have their doubts. They need to have, again, honestly, what actually is true for them. And at the same time, be willing to say, this doesn't work for me anymore. I don't know what will, but I'm willing to try something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
What I'd like to bring up with response to this exercise is I felt such a release in my body that it felt like the bodily release was going, and I hope it will, and I'll do this again a few times, will affect, I mean, not that there's a real separation, but in some ways there is, because if we let go of the thoughts, then we feel our bodies, that will soften the mind part. Maybe that's what you were saying. But it feels right. Like such a mind-body exercise that's the body part of it feels very important to the transformation.
Body part is very important, sweetie. You're exactly right. It actually is true that as we can be in relationship with our body and feel the movement in our body differently, it actually does have an effect on the mind. It does have an effect on our ability to allow things to, different ideas and thoughts to come to us. It allows more of a different kind of flow inside of our body, in our mind, where there actually is a different kind of activity. It actually lights up the brain differently. So it's actually true.
Yeah, that just feels like a very important recognition, and, you know, I'd like to work with that further.
Good. So, Nancy, what you said, again, I think is very important. I think what both of you have just said, it's very important. It is, we've all been hurt different ways. Some some in very big ways. And it is hard for us to, from that perspective, to say that I need to try something different. That's why often, as you know, with programs like 12-step programs, it only happens when someone reaches bottom. So often people have to reach a certain place in their pain when they can say, this just doesn't work anymore. And that can be true. That's actually part of the wholeness. That's a strange thing, again, for us to realize, but it's true. That that's the actual intelligence that's built into the pain, that's built into the struggle, the intelligence that's trying to lead us again and again to wholeness, that's saying, okay, this doesn't work anymore. You're not feeling whole. Try something else. This doesn't work. So it's leading us. It's encouraging us to come and find another way. To find a different relationship in which trust then becomes something that just happens. It happens organically out of it. We grow in trust of ourselves. We trust our feelings. We trust where we are. We trust one other person, you know, that we come to help us, and we grow in that. And then it, again, that's how the quality of our consciousness can change, because then we begin to see, okay, this was trustworthy here, so now maybe it's trustworthy with her, and then maybe it's trustworthy in other ways in my life and in the world. So this shift in consciousness that's required, again, it isn't something that is, it takes a different thing, because it is this place where we become awake to the way that we're filtering the world, and that we recognize that our filters actually affect how we experience the world. If we think the world is dangerous only, that affects how we move through the world. If we think the world is kind only, that affects how we move through the world. If we get that the world is filled with ambiguity, life and death, chaos and order, and that there's intelligence within it, that affects how we're with the world. So we're talking about these real changes in our consciousness in which we...
on a phone call. I can get off if you want.
Hello? So we're talking about these real changes in our consciousness. In which we're able to develop trust, and that we're not just the victims of our childhood, and that we actually have different levels of choice that are possible. Just for us, whatever that might be, we're also still limited beings. We have our limitations. We all have our places that are part of our journey. But we also can also find more wholeness. I really have seen that again and again through all these years of teaching and working with clients, that it's different for each person. It's different in terms of the levels of freedom we can find, the relationship of wholeness we can find, but it's still there. So another day when you're feeling adventurous, I'd like you to sit down and say, for a few moments, just, you know, sit down with this and go, what if my true fate, my destiny, is to awaken life into life with all of its ambiguity, its uncertainties? What if my true fate is to awaken? Try it out for a day. See what it feels like. How would your life look different if you really took on board that my fate is to awaken into the wholeness of reality? that it's built in, that I'm designed to awaken into the wholeness of life, that I'm designed to trust my life, that I'm designed to see the intelligence of my life and life around. Try it out for a day. Try it out for an hour. Try it out for 30 minutes if it works. Whatever works for you, but just try it out and see how it shapes your half hour or your day. See what happens. See what different thoughts come to you. See how you respond to people differently. Take it on as an experiment. So, I thank you all for coming, for being with me this morning. I know there are many other things we could do, and I'm grateful you came. Grateful to be with others who are asking these questions and exploring these ideas. And it's a very precious thing to be with people who want to experience more wholeness, more aliveness, more beauty, more trust. Anyone have anything they'd like to say as a final statement?
No,
thank you.
I'd like to thank you, Brenda.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hannah. All right, darlings. Take good care. Thank
you.
You
too, Brenda.
You too. Bye.
Thank you.
Sorry about your
camera. You too.
Thank you. Bye.
Be well, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Sorry about your cat. Really sorry.